supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and in the question of the week, we'll be discussing, maybe that was a Freudian slip there, kids, because we'll be discussing flies. Isn't that wonderful? Or is it perhaps disgusting? Well, don't worry about that, because we're going to have lots of your fabulous phone calls. First, Dawn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. How are you, Mike?
I am just ducky, Dawn. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
I'm doing well if you're doing well.
There we go. That's the spirit. Where is Dawn doing well?
I live in Freistadt, Missouri, a little village of 150 people, halfway between Joplin and Springfield.
Okay. How humid is it this summer?
It's very, very hot. Very, very dry.
It's dry? So, that's really unusual for you guys. When I've traveled to Missouri, it's always been humid in the summer.
Yes, right.
All right. What can we do for you today?
I have a tabletop lemon plant that I bought a year ago. It has four lemons on it, and I took it outside about 2 months ago, and it hasn't produced any new leaves or buds, and I wondered if it goes through a rest period. And also, I can't remember what kind of fertilizer I should be using. I have several different kinds, and there's been a conflict between what I've read on whether it should be low nitrogen or high nitrogen. I know it takes a year for the lemon to grow, and I hope to be picking one at the end of summer. It's just starting to turn yellow.
You are right to be confused. The instructions on these miniature dwarf lemon plants can be confusing. More than likely, you've got the famous Meyer lemon, which produces, you know, pretty much full-size lemon fruits on a very compact tree.
Right.
Now, remember one thing. Your tree is grafted. So
right. Mm-hmm.
if you choose to repot it in the future, make sure that visible line, that scar down below, is always above the soil line. That always needs to be exposed.
Okay, well, maybe when I put a little soil in there, maybe I've covered it up. Would that be the problem?
No, it would not be the problem now.
Okay.
If you cover the graft, you might get growth from the rootstock, and that would start becoming
okay.
a problem. You can get down there with a pair of chopsticks or your fingers and just scrape
right.
away soil from around the trunk. In general, these plants are kind of the reverse of our summertime gardens. Most Meyer lemons are going to flower around Christmas or New Year's, and then they're going to produce their fruits in the late winter, early spring, indoors.
Right.
Even people who don't have success getting fruit will keep that plant around because it is a beautiful-looking plant, and the smell of the flowers is unparalleled.
It is, and they don't smell like a lemon. That's interesting to me.
So I don't know what kind of fertilizers do you have. Are they all chemical?
I have two liquid fertilizers. One is a 30-10-10, and the other one is a 15-30-15, and I didn't know which of those I should be using.
Well, they're both pretty harsh chemical salts. One of the problems
okay.
with using chemicals in a house plant is they are all salt-based, and the salt is going to build up in the soil. And no plant needs that much nitrogen.
And I also recently got some granular fertilizer, a 12-4-8, that I put on top because that's what they had sprinkled on it when I got it.
What do they call it? Do they say it's for plant use in general, for house plants, or what?
They just say in general, I guess.
Those numbers are not bad. Those could all be achieved by natural means. The truth is that the plant does like more nitrogen than other fruiting plants because it takes a lot of energy to grow the lemons. Now is the time to be feeding it. Lemons are being produced, and it's expending a lot of energy utilizing that outdoor sunlight. Anytime you use a granular fertilizer, you want to cover it with compost or soil. So in your case, if the soil line in the pot is high enough, you want to use a technique called scratching the fertilizer into the surface. You want to use a couple of soup spoons or something like that. Take an inch of soil off, put the fertilizer down, then recover it with soil and water. That'll help it get utilized by the plant quicker. The 12-4 whatever, that sounds perfectly acceptable. I think the plant will react nicely to that.
Excuse me, if I need to put new soil in, would just regular potting soil with peat moss mixed in be acceptable?
A potting soil would be mostly peat moss to start with. So
You
don't want to mix more in. And the peat moss in potting soil will be pH adjusted. You don't want to go fooling around with peat moss on its own. I think people really don't understand its properties. But a good light potting soil would be good. And these indoor lemons love compost. So if you can get some yard waste compost mixed in there, that would give it a gentle feeding all year long.
Right. Okay. Very good. I'm excited about it. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Good luck, Dawn.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Lulu, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Lulu. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I am just ducky, thank you. Where is Lulu great?
I am from North Wilmington, Delaware.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Lulu in the small wonder of a state?
Wonderful. So I have this compost pile that I've been following the rules that you set forth and using shaded leaves and putting in coffee grinds in there, and I mix it for years. I've been getting great compost, putting them in my garden. So I did the same thing this year. And I think I probably messed up a little bit by putting from October or Halloween leftover pumpkins in there.
Right.
And so compost was looking great. It's rich, nice. Put it in my garden. My garden's looking great. I put it around all my flower beds in different places around my house. Leave for vacation. I come back and all these plants are everywhere. These huge leaves, huge flowers. And at first I was like, what the heck? Let me start pulling them out. And then as I look closer, I'm like, I think these are squash plants because they look like my squash plants.
Yep.
And then eventually I think these are pumpkins because I can have this memory. I've never done that before. I've never done anything other than the leaves and the coffee grind. But I was like,
But this is fun.
Is it fun? Because now I don't have access to my compost.
Oh, because the vines are growing out of the compost.
Oh, my God, it's beautiful. It's like all these plants, but I can't use my compost.
Now, okay, so volunteer plants are some of the most delightful things that can happen in the garden. The most common volunteer plant is potatoes coming up in your garden. Because at harvest time, you always miss a potato. The next year, they come up. Sometimes they come up in inopportune places. I have one growing almost out of a tomato plant right now. But I'm just going to leave it alone. I know those potatoes are going to be fabulous. The second is pumpkins. Now, all pumpkins are squash. All pumpkins are members of the squash family, but not all squash are pumpkins. Now, it sounds like you bought your pumpkin in one of these big pumpkin patch fields and everything.
Yep, one of the just local farms.
The odds are good that you will actually get pumpkins on this plant. But if it had been in your home garden, squash bees would have cross-pollinated the plants with your other squash, and you would get a wild card. One year this happened to me, and the vines were ginormous, and by this time in the season, I could see that they weren't pumpkins, and they were gigantic white birdhouse gourds. The gourds were about 3 feet tall each. They had that classic birdhouse dipper shape. It was hilarious. Do you have fruits coming out yet?
I do. I looked at it this morning.
Yeah.
And there's this green little melonish looking on one or two of the vines in the compost one. The other ones around my house, they just have beautiful big leaves in the morning, and then they shiver up and flowers, but I don't see anything happening.
Well, you should, because I'm sure you've got lots of bees in your garden and other pollinators. Yeah. Yeah, and they'll do their work, and you'll get fruits. They may not be pumpkins. It is a wild card. You don't know what you're going to get. It is so much fun. I don't know how big your pile is. Maybe you can harvest some from the back end or something like that without disturbing the squash vines. But if this were happening to me, I would laugh. I would go buy a bag of premium compost from my other plants, and I would just be really anxious to see what kind of fruits I got. Now, if you can differentiate the different vines from each other, make sure that once the fruits are fully formed that you don't let more than 3 fruits grow on any individual vine.
So do I pull the like little ones off or
yes,
something?
Yes, exactly. You pull all the little fruits off, or you pick the flowers off and eat those. All squash flowers are edible.
Oh, what?
Yeah, all squash flowers are edible. You'll find lots of recipes online, but the classic is to get that soft cheese from the supermarket or a gourmet supplier. Get soft cheese and stuff the flowers with the soft cheese and just eat it straight.
Oh, okay. I would definitely research that.
Squash blossoms are edible, a lot of fun, really classy. You have a little bit of a dinner party. You put like two of those on each person's plate as an appetizer. They go over huge.
So my compost pile is in the back of my house and underneath what I call the red burning bush.
Mm-hmm.
So do I need to give it more sunlight? I mean, there's just basically, there's nothing I should do.
Just accept this gift from nature and enjoy it.
Okay. All right. I'm excited. I'll send you some pictures.
Okay. Yeah. We love volunteer plants.
Thanks, Mike.
My pleasure. You have a good season.
You too. Bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will speak at the American Birding Expo in Oaks, PA on Saturday, September 22nd. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with the many moods of filthy flies and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, believe it or not, flies can be beneficial in the garden. I know you don't believe it, so stay tuned and you'll find out why. In the meantime, lots of your fabulous phone calls. Marge, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. I'm not having trouble with flies, but I am with mud wasps.
Okay. Where is Marge and her mud wasps?
I live in Marlton, New Jersey.
Okay. Just outside of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm. And I have a paver driveway. And I think they probably didn't put the driveway in correctly. I think they should have used gravel, and they probably didn't. We didn't put it in. We bought the house after it was installed. But the wasps keep coming up between the pavers, and I'm afraid it's going to collapse.
That's not likely, but it's also an unusual situation. What color are these wasps?
They're black.
They're black. So typically when you get wasps coming up out of the ground, they would be yellow and they would be yellow jackets and they would be incredibly dangerous. Mud dauber wasps and paper wasps tend to build their homes inside light fixtures outdoors or behind shutters or up in the eaves or something like that. They're typically not ground-based creatures. Has anybody been stung?
No. And you can walk through a flock of them, and they don't seem to mind. But I kind of Googled them, and it looks like mud wasps.
Okay.
But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I'm going to ask you to Google two more creatures.
Okay.
Because these are both true wasps, and they are ground nesters, but they are not known for stinging people. And you say they're swarming, so you see more than one at a time?
I do.
Okay, so then my first thought is a creature called the blue-winged wasp.
Okay.
B-L-U-E. I helped build a garden in the Salvation Army's big facility in North Philadelphia. I helped build a community garden out there. And after it had been established for a couple of years, I got this call that there were, quote, bees hovering over like one big portion of the garden. And I figure, oh, they're ground nesting native bees, or I should go out and check to make sure they're not yellow jackets. So I walked through this swarm, which was amazing. There must have been 50 or 60 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked through harmlessly, and then I started to look at these creatures real much more closely, and I started to decide that they probably weren't bees, but that they were a wasp. And that's when I learned about the blue-winged wasp. It nests underground. It nests in individual holes, but with large colonies. And it's just, it's neither good nor bad. It's just kind of there. And again, in our garden with kids running around all the time and everything, nobody ever got stung. The other would be the famous cicada-killing wasp.
Hmm.
And these are very large wasps. The female will look for a cicada, you know, those creepy, noisy guys.
Yes.
And she'll fly into the tree or wherever the cicada is, and she will sting it and paralyze it. And then whether it stays in the tree or it falls to the ground, she will pick it up and fly it to a hole. Now, this thing, this cicada, is three times her size. So the flight is somewhat erratic, and sometimes she does not so much fly as plummet. But she carries this creature back, lays her eggs inside of it, and then puts it in the hole in the ground, and her babies have cicada for dinner for their developmental process. But when you have those, you almost always see the wild kingdom part. You almost always see the female wasp dragging this huge thing into the hole. There's also the possibility, one of the things I've learned on this show, is bees come in all shapes and sizes. And there are bees that look like wasps. There are bees that look like flies. So my third thought is these could be solitary ground nesting native bees. It's kind of like South Philly. Everybody lives in their own house, but there's like clusters where everybody in the block is related to each other. So the fact that nobody is being stung tells me they're not mud dauber or paper wasps, because those are fairly aggressive. You walk around them, they're going to give you a sting. I'm thinking it's either the blue-winged wasp, the cicada killer wasp, or it's some form of native bee. If you can get a good picture of one of these creatures, send it to the New Jersey Extension. Call your local office. Get a good email to send it to. And ask their entomologist to tell you what they think.
Well, my concern is they're building mounds of sand all over the driveway, so they're pulling the dirt up from under the driveway.
No, they're not going to cause any kind of structural problem.
Okay.
And the mounds of sand lead me to believe that it might be some sort of ground nesting digger bee. How long have they been obvious? How long have they been flying around?
Probably 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay. And there's no sign of them letting up?
No.
I think they're near the end of their life cycle.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're not going to do any harm. Now, for the future, what I want you to do is research a group of plants called steppables.
Okay.
And these are low-growing herbs and other useful plants that are actually designed to plant in between pavers. Because, you know, otherwise, insects will use that bare space or weeds will grow there.
Mm-hmm.
But you grow some low-growing creeping thyme or a creeping mint or something like that. And that'll fill up the space between the pavers. It'll look very attractive. And then every time you walk on it, you'll get a beautiful scent.
Mm.
And these creatures won't then build their nest there anymore. They want bare ground.
Okay.
So this year, don't worry about them. Try to find out what they are, but I'm pretty sure they're harmless. And then in the spring, plant some low-growing thyme. You'll never regret that. Some creeping thyme in those crevices, and it won't happen again, and you'll have this fabulous scented walkway.
Sounds great. Good idea. Thank you, Mike.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Jim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Jim. Thank you so much for asking. How are you, sir?
I'm great. It's warm here today. I'm enjoying the warm weather.
And where is there, Jim?
I live in North Idaho, about 12 miles from Sandpoint.
Okay, very good. What can we do for you, sir?
Well, I've got 6 fruit trees, and they're not flowering or blooming. My neighbor, he bought his fruit trees the same time I did. He's already got apples. Mine are not blooming. I have, there's a wild apple down by the county road. I dug up a couple of suckers, and planted them. They're about 4 or 5 years old, but they're not blooming.
Ah, that's because suckers don't turn into real trees. They don't turn into flowering trees.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can get apples that are on their own rootstock, but generally you don't know what kind of apple you're going to get. What typically happens, apples are probably the most grafted fruit tree. Growers will grow sturdy rootstock, and then at one point, maybe when the rootstock is 2 years old, they'll lop off the top, and then they'll graft a scion, a young green branch of a flowering happy tree of the right variety they want on top. And then the rootstock, especially in your area with your very cold winters, the rootstock will protect the tree, and the top part, the scion, will grow into the branches of the kind of variety you want. Typically, apples will flower like crazy in the springtime.
Yeah, I'm surprised. The apple tree where I dug up the little suckers around the bottom of the tree, it has great apples every year, and lots of them.
And they're free, Jim. Go down and get them. You don't have to grow your own.
Well, that's true. That's true.
With apples, there's two things you have to remember. If you collect the seed from an apple that you really like and you plant that seed, it will eventually grow into a full-size apple tree, but it will not be the same fruit. It'll be a total wild card. The fruit may be better, or it may be of really poor quality. And the second is that suckers or runners or water sprouts or anything like that will not grow into a fruiting tree. You need to graft the part you want onto a desirable rootstock, which in your area, you don't have that many disease pressures on apples the way we do here in the Mid-Atlantic, but obviously your trees have to be really cold hardy. What's your zone, like 4?
I don't know. I'm in the foothills of the Cabinet Mountains here.
Yeah, so
but actually, I have some other trees I bought from a nursery.
Right.
I have a cherry, I have a prune, an apricot, and but they're only a couple years old, so it'll probably take, what, 3 or 4 years for those to blossom and fruit?
Well, it depends on how old they were when you bought them. Typically, nurseries will have trees available at a good size. Say they're already 5-6 feet tall. Those trees should bloom within 2 or 3 years. If you buy a really tiny tree that's only a couple of feet tall, then, yeah, you got to add years to it before it'll start to flower for you. How big are the trees now, man?
They're about 5-6 feet tall, I think.
Okay, so the first question then is, do they get a lot of sun?
They do. They get a lot of sun.
And do you feed them anything?
I'm a organic farmer.
Right, good, good.
So I have given them a little bit of, you know, organic compost, but maybe not enough. And the other thing is, a nursery sold me some spikes you drive into the ground.
They're not organic.
Well, they're not, huh?
No, they're chemical salts. You don't know. And they're not good for trees. That's just a marketing ploy. So you haven't surrounded these with manure or other high nitrogen fertilizer or anything?
I haven't. No, my compost, I mix grass clippings and manure. And that's about the only thing I put in my garden. Really.
Okay, yeah, that's not good for flowering plants.
That's, oh, it's not?
No, that's all nitrogen. Manure is high in nitrogen. Grass clippings are 10% nitrogen.
So what should I feed them?
You want your compost pile to be at least 3/4 leaves. The rest of it, that would be great for it to be manure. And leave the grass clippings on the ground. You'll get a healthier turf if you return that nitrogen right back to where you got it from.
Then I should get some fruit.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. I'll keep you posted then. I'll send you a text or something if I get some fruit.
All right, very good. Please do that. Good luck.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. Trixie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Trixie. How are you?
I'm doing good.
And where is Trixie doing good?
I'm in Bluebell.
Okay, just outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, right down the road.
Okay. Now, did your parents name you Trixie, or is this a self-assigned name?
I'm actually Beatrice. But
oh, okay.
My nieces and nephews couldn't say Beatrice, so they say Tristan. So it's a nickname.
And you like it too.
I do.
Yeah, no, it suits you. All right, what can we do for Trixie and Bluebell, PA?
I had bought some lemon verbena plants through a mail order, and they came, and they just don't seem to be growing very well. They sprouted green. They've got lots of leaves, but they're really small, and I keep them kind of in the shade, so I'm just wondering what I'm doing wrong.
Why are you keeping them in the shade?
Well, it's really intense sun. It's kind of half shade, half sun.
Okay. When is the sun? In the morning or the evening?
Morning.
Oh, okay. That's not the worst thing you could do. Are they planted in the ground or in containers?
Container.
What kind of containers?
Like a pot.
What's it made of?
Terracotta.
Ah, okay. How often do you water?
Maybe once every week.
Okay.
Once a week.
It's not glazed, right? It's just the famous terracotta-colored ceramic pot.
Correct.
Yeah. They look beautiful. They are classic. People see them and they immediately think of gardening. But one of the issues with terracotta is it's porous. It actually wicks its moisture into the air. So in the kind of hot weather that you've had a really couple of good stretches of this summer, all the moisture in that soil is knocked out of there in a single day. Now, you've probably also had a lot of thunderstorms and stuff like that that has revived the plants. But what I want you to do is go out and rock the pot. Catch the side of it and move it back and forth a little bit and see how it feels. And then let it go without watering for a day or two and rock it again. You'll see it has become remarkably light. What you want to do then, basically or ideally early in the morning, is go out there with a watering can. Do you have other plants around?
Yes.
So instead of emptying the watering can into the plant, because you've seen this, it all just runs out the bottom.
Right.
What you want to do is give it like a half pint of water. And then move on and give the next plant a half pint of water. And then move on and do that in succession. And then go back to the beginning again. If you water small amounts and give it 5 minutes in between, the soil will soak up the moisture instead of letting it all run through. And then when the plant is totally saturated, you try to rock the pot. You might not be able to. It'll be 3 or 4 times as heavy as when the plant was really dry. And that's your best judge of whether a plant needs water or not. I don't care if you watered it 5 hours ago. If it's light to the touch, it needs more water. I don't care if you watered it 6 weeks ago. If it's heavy, it doesn't need more water yet. But terracotta is going to, by definition, require a lot more frequent watering than with a plastic pot. Do you feed the plants anything?
I don't.
Do you have access to any worm castings, compost, anything like that?
Well, I do my own compost, and
right.
In the past I have mixed it in, but this year I was kind of in a rush, so I just used potting soil, vegetable potting soil.
Okay, vegetable potting soil.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean it had chemical fertilizer in it?
No, it was organic.
Oh, okay, that's great. That's great. So you started out with some nutrition. Do you have any of your finished compost? Just put a 1-inch layer on top of the pot.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit of compost on top for nutrition and more water. It's almost impossible to overwater terracotta because it not only drains really well, but again, it wicks its moisture into the air like a sponge. So overwatering is not an issue with you, but underwatering will be. And I think with the weather still ahead of us, you're going to see it take off.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
All right. Our pleasure. Thank you, Trix. Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will travel down south to appear on Tuesday, October 23rd in beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. But don't go checking the Mike's Events section of our website for all the details just yet, because we'll be right back with the many moods of Filthy Flies and more of your moody phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we are in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a few minutes, we'll talk about the good things that flies can do in your garden. You heard that right, and you'll hear it again after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls. Scott, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey there.
Hey, Scott, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks for being had, Scott. Where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia. I'm in the Chestnut Hill neighborhood.
Ooh, very nice out there. Yeah, very tree-lined, real canopy out in Chestnut Hill.
It's funny you should mention trees, yes. That's the reason I was calling. So several months ago, I noticed in my backyard where I have a very large old Japanese maple tree, I noticed on my grass that there were these piles of what appeared to be bark from the tree. And I was like, what in the heck is that? And I looked around, and then I looked up, and I noticed on the tree that there were several multiple areas, maybe 10 or 12 areas that had been stripped entirely of the bark. I had no idea what could have caused that, but a few days later, I noticed a squirrel happily munching on the bark of the tree, and I shouted at it, and it, you know, ran away. I think my dog scared it off as well, but it's come back several times, and I've caught it. And it's not going away, and the problem continues. So I did a bit of research on the internet and found some things, and including some bizarre solutions, to me anyway, that included, spraying pepper spray or, believe it or not, even fox urine, which I thought was very bizarre. But so I was wondering if you'd ever heard of this before and encountered this issue.
Yes. Now, let's refer to them by their correct scientific name. It's not squirrels. It's evil squirrels. Okay?
Exactly. Right. That's the species.
Yeah. I was filing copy once, and a newspaper editor sent me an email and said, how do you tell the difference between evil squirrels and the regular kind? And I said, the evil squirrels have fur and tails. So, yeah, man, it's funny. I did not know that you were going to talk about this, but when I think of Chestnut Hill, I think of beautiful street trees in every neighborhood, a total unending canopy where squirrels can just be like on the monkey bars at the zoo.
Right.
So, yes, they will do this, but it doesn't sound like the tree is young.
It's not, right. It's a pretty happy, healthy old Japanese maple.
Yeah.
Not one of the smaller ones.
Generally, when a deer would nibble on the bark of a tree or squirrels would eat at the bark of a tree, it would be a young tree that is tender and a little sweeter. A lot of times, squirrels do this stuff just to annoy the heck out of us. They have nothing better to do. It takes them about 45 seconds to feed and groom themselves, and the rest of the time they spend trying to find new ways to enrage humans. You mentioned fox urine. I'm glad you mentioned it so that I can tell you don't use it. There's never been a study where predator urines have been shown to be effective, but absolutely their collection is cruel in the extreme. Solutions of hot pepper, especially professionally made ones, can be effective if the concentration is strong enough. I don't know if it's still on the market, but there used to be a spray that was either called or was hot pepper wax. And the wax part is important because you can soak peppers in water and spray it all over the tree, and the solution will be gone by morning. So the most important thing along with the active ingredient is the sticker spreader. So this stuff was waxy and it stayed on the tree. In your situation, this would also be a situation that I think maybe my first choice would be a deer repellent, because you can buy most deer repellents in a concentrated form, not ready to use. Then you can mix it up twice as strong and really saturate the areas where the squirrel is nibbling in and really keep it up. Literally maybe spray this stuff every day for a week, because there's no reason for the squirrel to do this. It doesn't need food. It's not building a nest or anything like that with the bark. It's just doing it to annoy you. So the best deer repellents, their active ingredient is putrescent egg solids, rotten eggs. It will actually say putrescent egg solids on the label. No, I'm serious. You want to buy a deer repellent with the highest concentration of putrescent egg solids, and then you want to spray it on double duty. You want to mix it up with only half the amount of water. Now, it would be illegal to do that with a fertilizer or a pesticide or anything like that, but with an animal repellent, there are no rules that can't allow you to up the strength. The idea is the next time the squirrel takes a bite, they get a mouthful of putrescent egg solids, and they go find somebody else to annoy.
It'll be a challenge to get high enough in some parts of the tree to do this, but I'll do my best.
A backpack sprayer, which is a good investment if you have a garden and you have things, trees that you want to spray to protect them against insects or something like that.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks so much. I really enjoy your show and your all your solutions and the various witticisms as well. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott. Good luck, man.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Kim, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Kim. Thank you for asking. How are you doing?
I'm good.
And where is Kim good?
I am good in Newark, Delaware.
Newark, Delaware. All right. What can we do for Kim?
Last week, I thought I had a really bright idea of taking some yard waste from the home of a relative and using it to fill up a raised bed that I have.
Mm-hmm.
But on my way home on that drive, it dawned on me that my relatives, who all live in a pretty close approximation to each other, all have had this summer the spotted lanternflies on their properties. And I thought, oh my goodness, I probably made a mistake. I did end up taking the yard waste back without using it on my property, without even taking it out of my truck.
Uh-huh.
So I still have the question of what I should do to cheaply fill up a raised bed that's 4x8 and 22 inches high. So I initially needed help with the question of whether or not I'd be taking spotted flies back to my property where there is no infestation.
Right. Well, you're good to be overly cautious. Are your relatives in Pennsylvania?
Yes, they are, in Montgomery County.
Yeah, because that's where the spotted lanternfly is so far still isolated in like 4 or 5 southeastern Pennsylvania counties. The spotted lanternfly is an insidious new pest. It looks like a clown when its wings are spread wide, but you rarely see it that way because it's actually a plant hopper. It has wings, but it prefers to hop between plants, and it is newly arrived. They're trying to keep it contained, and believe it or not, the bigger risk was you driving in and out. If spotted lanternflies are in the egg-laying stage, they seem to love to lay their eggs in clusters on the sides of trucks and cars and in wheel wells. That's how we fear they're going to spread. They also lay their eggs on firewood and tree bark. So there have been campaigns for a decade now to ask people not to move firewood from place to place. And firewood is going to be the second biggest cause of their spread. The eggs look like mud splashed up on the side of the truck or the side of the tree or the piece of firewood. You can find pictures of their egg clusters online. They're not going to be in compost or yard waste or soil, to the best of my knowledge. But again, you did the right thing taking it back. Now, what I would suggest is you look over your truck or just take it to a car wash and, you know, just run it through a car wash. Make sure you didn't bring any eggs back from the area of infestation. That's the big fear, not crossing the state line with an adult in a pile of leaves, but bringing a cluster of eggs back to Delaware. Now, to answer your first question, you go to a good local independent garden center or your local municipality. You might have locally made compost available to you for free or for cheap from nearby municipalities. Have you checked into that?
I haven't yet.
That's the first thing I would do is call your township and see if they or nearby communities are making compost from the yard waste and giving it back to residents. And then the ideal is 50-50 compost and topsoil. And what I would always do with a bed that size is work in a good amount of perlite, which is the white material in potting soils that looks like styrofoam balls, but it's actually a mined mineral that's very cool. and it's great for improving drainage and at the same time providing moisture to plants.
Okay. The directions with the raised bed plates is start with cardboard, actually the cardboard box that it came in at the bottom. Is that good? And should I layer it with any more cardboard?
I actually recommend there be a layer of cardboard at the bottom of the raised bed, just so no old weeds come up through the bottom the first year.
Okay.
And then by the second year, the cardboard will deteriorate, but any weeds that were underneath will have been smothered.
Okay, and I should water the cardboard before putting anything else on top of it, or not necessarily?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Kim, and you did the right thing.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Beneficial bugs or filthy flies? Brett Rader, recently promoted to be the official producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started with another lengthy question this week.
Sure, Mike. Allison in Philadelphia, specifically south of Fitler Square, north of Devil's Pocket, and near the Schuylkill River Trail, writes, I have a patio garden with pots, railing planters, and a raised bed filled with hydrangeas, petunias, roses, impatiens, gardenias, pumpkin vines, hibiscus, butterfly bush, two tomato plants, and a few herbs. I'm trying to attract good bugs and pollinators. I've seen a few bees in the front, one butterfly out back, and many birds. The plants are all doing well. I even had a red tomato before the 4th of July. But I have an abundance of flies. The residents of a nearby apartment building always put their trash out several days early, which I know can attract flies. But the flies in my back patio are relentless. Mike, this question's going on for quite a while. You want to jump in on it?
Nope.
Well, what a charmer you are. Allison continues, I bought fly traps and have caught literally hundreds of flies within a few days. But now I'm wondering, is this paradoxically attracting even more flies to my garden? And if I want good bugs, do I have to buy them online to release in the spring? Full disclosure, I do have a dog and dispose some of his waste in our trash can. But that's not where the flies are. They're around the plants. All right, Mike, you have to say something now.
Why?
Because it's your show. Because I said so.
That's bad parenting on a stick. Jeez, get a grip. Now, Watson, analyze the young lady's missive. What is missing in her communication that is ordinarily the prime topic in an email to our show?
I don't know. False, insincere praise to you in the hopes of getting an answer, maybe?
Dear, dear. All right. How does she say that her plants are doing, my good man?
Her plants? Let's look here. Well, it sounds like her plants are just fine. Wait a minute. Are you going to tell us that flies are good?
Everything on this planet is good for something, Brett, even you and me. Now, there are two possibilities here. One is that these are just nasty flies that can often be a plague in urban areas. Our beloved originating station, WHYY, is only 3 blocks from where the Declaration of Independence was drafted. And history tells us that Philadelphia was under siege by flies that summer. And the founders had to keep the windows closed despite the stifling heat that year.
You are so stalling.
No, I'm not. Read your line.
Ahem. Pray tell, Holmes, what be the other reason?
Well, the other reason is more like two reasons. There are over 150,000 species of what are called flies, either commonly or in the world of entomology, and pretty much all of them are or can be pollinators. We've talked in the past about how flies pollinate the native pawpaw fruit, and in the tropics there would be no chocolate without pollination by flies.
But she's not growing pawpaws or chocolate.
My, that sounds good. Chocolate-covered pawpaws. Yum. Anyway, all members of the fly family, including mosquitoes, can be effective pollinators. There's even a subgroup of flies called flower flies. Those are members of the syrphid fly family that are famed pollinators, second really only to bees.
So do you think that's what she has?
Yeah, I'd like to say yeah, but a lot of the beneficial flies don't look like house flies. Many of them are imitators of bees and wasps, mimicking their appearance to deter predators.
All right, well, good flies or bad flies? What are we talking here?
There are a lot of beneficial insects in the very large fly family. The tachinid fly is in everyone's beneficial top 10, as is the robber fly. Then there's the soldier fly, the hover fly, and pollen flies. And again, even the common house fly is a well-known pollinator.
Oh, hold on. You mentioned pawpaws and chocolate before. Now, they need flies for pollination. What about the plants she has growing?
You anticipate my hope. Of her list, only roses have a large percentage of fly pollinators.
What's the chance that these are just nuisance flies?
Just nuisances? Very small. All flies are going to pollinate flowers, and she notes that she has few bees. But in general, yeah, especially in the city where neighbors are careless about their trash, and especially near large bodies of water, as she is to the Schuylkill River.
What's an urban gardener to do?
Well, I kind of hate to say it, but number one is to dime out those neighbors. You can't have trash sitting out close to a week in advance, especially in the summer. Second, keep up with the traps. As she noted, fly traps are highly effective. And third, and most importantly, just focus on keeping the flies out of the house.
Because in the garden, they will help pollinate plants and won't directly harm any plants.
Well said, Watson. Well, that sure was a different look at flies now, wasn't it? You might even say that we looked at flies from both sides now. All right, okay, you wouldn't say that, neither would anybody else. Anyway, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over at your leisure or leisure, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week, and you will always find the latest question of the week at the Gardens Alive website. Yikes, my producer is threatening to turn me into Tommy Troy. Look it up. If I don't get out of the studio, we must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore, at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location with that email, especially if you are certain that we do not need it. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location and where you will find the answers to all those gardening questions you were going to send us, audio of this show, past shows, and our extremely popular podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer this week is Diana Martinez. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and stay current with the show at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website flying high. Al Banks is our non-infested editor. Our no longer associate producer of Production Association, but now full-fledged producer is Brett Rader. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. The year, 1959. There is no Spider-Man yet. There is no Hulk, and there are no Fantastic Four. But I, of course an orphan, every comic book hero is an orphan, find a strange fly-shaped ring in an old chest in a moldy old attic. Put it on, see a carefree fly buzzing on the windowsill, rub that ring and say, I wish I were the fly. And then... Yeah, okay, you're right. Nobody would say that. I'm going to go back to being Tommy Troy, and then I'll see you again next week.